RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and finally we're here to talk to you today on this Monday on the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. It's happening, Frank. It's happening.
I can't believe it. We had a little bit of problems. We were trying to get some technical wrinkles all ironed out before the show. As you all know, we didn't have the Friday masterpiece will never be heard, but whatever.
Friday's show was so good, but nobody got to listen to it. Nobody.
I know, because it would just sound like me talking to an imaginary friend. You weren't even paying.
My gosh, Frank. I said it would probably be really funny if we, like, literally released just that.
I would be embarrassed. I would sound psychotic. I would sound like a lunatic.
You would, and we even made fun of the people who called Chuck, what's his name from Daily Caller? Chuck Ross, a white nationalist. It was so good, but we cannot dwell on the past, Frank. We cannot dwell on the past. So here we are in the future.
So what the hell happened this weekend?
So there's a lot of stuff that went on this weekend. We had Lindsey Graham. It was all yesterday, basically. Lindsey Graham came out and said that he had a bombshell revelation that the information came to him in a declassified briefing that was given to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence by someone from the FBI, that the Steele dossier was backed up by the primary subsource, which is the complete opposite of what was true. There's a lot of people going back and forth, though, talking about how there may be sort of, I don't know, ways to tell that Lindsey Graham already knew this. And
so what the hell is this guy's deal? I don't know. What the hell is this guy's deal, Tracy? I don't trust him. I'll never will.
No.
He spent too much time
bloviating
with the old guard.
Yeah. And bloviating. You know, he says now he's going to subpoena. Well, Ron Johnson this morning put out some subpoenas that were pretty interesting. Said he's going to subpoena Jonathan Weiner from the State Department. Let's talk about this. There is impending drama that's coming out of the Senate. I think it's Adam Schiff and the House for that matter too. I think it's Adam Schiff who's saying that the Republicans all received some sort of, you know, reports or information from Ukrainians who were looking to undermine and who were, you know, the Ukraine scandal's coming back up. So Senator Johnson's been making some very strong statements in regards to the misinformation that the Democrats are putting out about all this. Like just this morning, for example, he said, I shared it on my Twitter account. I said, Ron Johnson is angry because the Senate is subpoenaing. Is that how you say it? Subpoenaing?
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I think subpoenaing.
Subpoenaing. Their Senate subpoena from Ron Johnson for Ray to produce all records related to Crossfire Hurricane investigation. And then another subpoena has been prepared for Jonathan Weiner, a former employee of the State Department. I will tell you right now, if Ron Johnson is doing this stuff, his hearings have really been very good. And I know he's a good guy and he cares about the truth. I'll just say that. I know that for a fact. At least nothing that he's done that I've seen has told me otherwise.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please keep going.
So I know it's late in the game now for all this to be coming out. It's like, all right, already. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Like Congress, you know, Senate, you guys had years to do this. You're waiting till now. You should have been doing this. You should have been doing this as soon as Mueller testified that he didn't talk to anybody that was important or it wasn't in his purview or he couldn't share. You know, he didn't talk to anybody. He didn't talk to anybody of consequence. He only went after Trump. So it's a big mishmash. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. So basically they're trying to frame up, the left is trying to frame up anybody who is now speaking publicly about any of this or doing any due diligence to expose it or anything like that. And Lindsey Graham went on Maria Bartiromo yesterday morning to drop all this information. And I have some clips that we'll listen to if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love to listen to it. There's some things I paid attention to over the weekend, but this was not it.
Okay.
So I want to know what the hell happened.
This is Lindsey Graham yesterday on Maria Bartiromo's show. I have basically the whole interview here we can listen to. Here.
Here they are. It took me forever to get them. I want to thank Attorney General Barr for helping me retrieve them from the FBI.
Now, hold on. I'm just going to stop it there. It took me forever to get him. I mean, he just sounds like he's lying. But other than that, what he's insinuating is basically that
Ray
was holding all the stuff and he needed Barr to pry it from Ray's hands.
Right. So not only do I not believe Lindsey Graham is this warrior for truth and justice, but that is a direct implication of the kind of firewall that Ray has been.
And I'm sorry, no matter how many times people say to me he's a good guy, I'll never believe it. I've said it a gazillion times. I don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. I think that he was covering all this up because this internet sleuths have figured out that based on footnotes and stuff that this briefing that Lindsey Graham is talking about, which was now released to the public, by the way, is given the February 14th, 2018, after Ray has taken the helm already. And it's McCabe that's giving this briefing, trying to cover their asses. Excuse my French. Mm. So let's listen to the rest of this. Sorry.
Horowitz, during his investigation of the warrant application, found information in 2018 where the FBI was called to the Senate Intel Committee because people were getting suspicious about the subsource, the Russian guy, at the Senate Intel Committee level. And the FBI was sent over to brief them. And this is the report they prepared before the briefing. And they did to the Senate Intel Committee, the FBI did, what they did to the FISA court. They misled the hell out of them. They said that there's no evidence from the subsource to suggest that Steele fabricated anything in the dossier. Actually, the subsource said it was all Barr talk, hearsay, speculation, and conjecture, and the whole sexual activity of the president was made in jest. So they completely misrepresented to the Senate Intel Committee in 2018 what the subsource had told the FBI in 2017. That is a new crime, a different crime, and I'm going to write a letter to Christopher Wray and ask him who gave the briefing to the Senate Intel Committee in 2018, and how could they be telling the Senate Intel Committee in 2018 a bunch of lies when they knew better?
Now, the elephant in the room, obviously, is that the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report that came out was complete hogwash. It was a partisan hack job. You know, we might as well have a Democrat Senate at this point, because that report was based on complete lies. None of the stuff that they said in there is true. It's all propaganda and BS.
Yep.
From the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. So, Lindsey Graham, you know, how high and noble of you. People can figure out that it was Andrew McCabe in 5 seconds, but your team of staffers can't. You need to write a letter to Christopher Wray. Sorry. Sorry. So he seems very upset, right? I mean, he really does.
Yeah, no, you said it best, and that's what I kind of groaned a little bit about when you were talking. It's just, as you were going through what is about to be called for and what's being unveiled right now, I just had to glance, even though I knew the date, I glanced down at the bottom right-hand corner of my computer screen, and what stared back at me was August 10th, 2020, and at no time in Trump's administration was there ever a changing of hands in the Senate. The Senate has been Republican the entire time. And to see this kind of movement in the last couple of months leading up to an election is, I don't know. It just brings me back to what we were saying a couple of years ago. There are people, obviously, in the Democrat House that are using every last bit of their majority power to go on and wage all-out war. And there are people in the GOP that seemingly are just trying to survive this administration without ruffling too many feathers, to just, you know, say all the right things, to come off as a team player. But ultimately, here we are.
here we are at the end of the day, basically in the same place that we were 2 years ago, except now Republicans realize if they don't talk about this stuff, they won't get elected.
Yep.
Let's listen to the next clip here.
Go to jail for this. This is a second lie. This is a second crime. They lied to the FISA court. They got rebuked, the FBI did, in 2019.
Yeah, we know. Hold on.
Rebuked.
Here's what I think. I think the person who briefed the Senate Intel Committee had to be part of Crossfire Hurricane, because why would you keep telling a lie? If they told the truth to the Senate Intel Committee in 2018, the dossier is not reliable, it would expose the crime they committed to the FISA court. So I bet you a dollar to donuts that the...
Lindsey Graham, you're so... He has to know who it is. There's no way he doesn't. What do you think?
Of course, I mean, I'd have to agree.
I think he's only wanting us to call it out.
But here's the thing: I start thinking about the inner politics of this. If he knows, then there has to be some level of playing dumb with the president this entire time.
He would have known this 2 years ago.
I know. Yeah, I know. But he can't. He couldn't. There's no way that the president doesn't go declare war on Lindsey Graham like he declared war on Jeff Sessions, had Graham led on that he actually knew something to the president 2 years ago, and here we are still. There needs to be either a mass deception, or there needs to be some sort of a secret understanding that is in place here, because obviously here we are on the outside looking in, and we're just playing the speculation game with whatever kind of tidbits of information we're allowed to digest. So there needs to be, like I said, some kind of deception or some kind of secret agreement there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, think about Christopher Wray. How much, I mean, you pay a lot more attention than I do. But I have not seen that much pressure come down from Trump onto Christopher Wray as he bared down with his full weight onto Jeff Sessions. Have you?
No, a few times, but no.
See, this is what I'm talking about. That's inconceivable to me that Donald Trump, unless he knows something we don't, is comfortable with the job that Christopher Wray has done. On the other hand, Christopher Wray was confirmed with over 91 votes with the Senate, I don't see how anybody gets 91 votes and isn't somebody to be distrusted. I don't know.
It's crazy when our conversation has to be if our Senate votes to confirm somebody, we can't trust them. That's
absolutely.
It's just ridiculous.
Not by that margin. Definitely not by that margin.
That's the state of affairs summed up in like one short sentence right there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Here, wait.
Person who briefed the Senate Intel Committee in 2018 was part of Crossfire Hurricane trying to compound lies.
Was it Bill Priestap?
I don't know, but I'm going to write Ray, and I want an explanation. This happened on Christopher Ray's watch.
Okay.
Now, this is in 2018,
yes,
a
exactly.
year after the subsource That's was right. interviewed by the FBI three times, telling them it's a bunch of garbage, and they tell the Senate Intel Committee it's reliable, just like they did.
It's crazy, because Lindsey Graham knows so many facts in this interview, but when he gets into a hearing, he can't string together a coherent sentence.
Yeah.
He calls General Flynn General Kislyak. You know, he doesn't know to ask about the transcripts.
The FISA court. I'm going to find out who did that briefing.
What are you going to do?
Whoever it is, they're in trouble.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to find out who did the briefing.
You're going to write a letter to Christopher Wray.
Right. I'm going to write a letter to Christopher Wray and explain this briefing to the Congress. How could you send somebody over from the FBI in 2018, February/March 2018, to brief about the subsource and mislead the Senate so badly? You had information in your files that Horowitz found where the subsource completely denied the reliability of the dossier, but the FBI continued the lie as late as 2018.
Which makes you wonder, too. They really thought they were going to get away with this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, McCabe goes in and lies with impunity to the Senate in a briefing. They really thought they were going to get away with this. They really did.
Well, depending on what happens in November, they may still. Some of them, I don't know. Depending, I don't know. You know, what can be, I don't know.
I was on an interview with Michael Pelka this morning. Great, great guy. His name is Stunt Brain on Twitter. He's just fantastic. I interview with him all the time. He likes, you know, we have great conversation. And I had an interview this morning. And he said, what happens if we lose the Senate? Does this all go away? And I said, no, because it's criminal. But if we lose the Senate and the House and the White House, we have a lot bigger issues to worry about than whether or not Andrew McCabe lied to the Senate again.
That would be the epitome of a nightmare.
I mean, wow. Can you imagine the hell that would? Oh, forget it. Please, people, you vote for God's sakes.
I think that's going to happen no matter what. The voting, that's not going to be a problem. It's going to be how the vote is contested. Ultimately, that's what we're going to be waiting to see. You know, I guess that's the first time I've really come to that conclusion here, even though we've danced around the subject and we made other points, is that in normal elections or in times, maybe who knows how many of the elections we've lived through actually were normal and we just didn't know what the hell was going on. But in normal times, on an election day, even if it's just a local election, you sit around, you go out there, you vote, and you wait for the results. Now, we are actually just going to sit around and wait to see how the results are going to be contested. It doesn't matter what the results are. The real story is going to be how they are contested and what the story is from one side or the other, that it's not going to be legitimate results.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we're waiting for this November.
Pretty sad. It's all very sad. It really is. And so this is the brux of the letter. So that came out. And then as that was happening, Frank, an article was dropped on Matt Taibbi's site by a guy named Stephen Schrage. Have you ever heard of him? Do you remember his name at all?
No, but I know Matt Taibbi or whatever his name is. Yeah. I know him.
Okay. So this guy, Stephen Schrage, we know his name because of Svetlana Lakova. And when I first read this article, I did not put two and two together. But Stephen Schrage is the guy who invited Carter Page over to that seminar where Stefan Halper met him for the first time. So he comes out over the weekend and he talks about how he was the reason Stefan Halper got to meet General Carter Page. He says that he has audio tape, which we listened to, of Stefan Halper saying 2 days before the leak of the Kislyak calls and stuff that General Flynn would not be in the position he's in for very long because he has powerful enemies. This is two
days
before. Yes. And we can listen to
that. That's some pretty clairvoyant powers there.
Mm-hmm. Very clairvoyant. Not only that, though, this article is very long. He says he's brought this, you know, he's been interviewed by John Durham. He brought this stuff to Durham. He's a, quote, Republican Romney guy. Okay. This is no slouch. He was in the G8. He had all kinds of very high level positions. The interesting thing is this. During CPAC, there was a panel in one of the side rooms. They have all these panels throughout the day where you can go and sit. And it was run by John Batchelor. And it was Lee Smith. It was Svetlana. And it was a couple other people on the panel. And I was in that panel. And it was like you could barely fit in that room. God, today they wouldn't have been able to have it. I mean, we were crammed in there like sardines. And towards the middle of the panel, I had to leave because I had an interview to do upstairs. So I left and I gave Mike Flynn Jr. my seat. He was outside and we were texting. I said, here, come and sit in my seat. I'm leaving. He sat down and in comes Stephen Schrage to sit behind Mike Flynn Jr. and listen to this panel. This is at CPAC this year. And Svetlana was saying, why is he here? She knew him right away. You know, we've interviewed her about this. She hasn't talked about this specific thing, but we've interviewed her about Schlage. She's mentioned him. He was a student of Halper, and he's like incredulous throughout his entire interview. How could you know, how could my professor, this idiot, basically be a spy? He compares them as he calls them the Cambridge Four. And he talks about Halper, Steele, Dearlove, and Andrew, the Cambridge Four, because parallels to another British spy story of yore, perhaps the most notorious intelligence scandal in history, the Cambridge Five spy ring.
Hmm.
And he goes through, it's a very long piece, but he also did an interview on Bartiromo's show yesterday, too. And they play the
one with the one with Graham on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, they play the clip on here of Stefan Halper. I know that. Okay, we're just going to listen to this clip right now. Here we go.
This breaking news exclusive. It was the spark that ignited one of the worst abuses of power in our country's history. In July of 2016, Carter Page attended an overseas conference in Cambridge where he first met informant Stefan Halper. 3 months later, the FBI secured the first of four FISA warrants to unlawfully spy on Carter Page. My next guest is the man who first introduced Page to Halper while he was working as a PhD candidate at Cambridge. Stephen Schrage is with us. He is joining me for the first ever television interview for him. What is your background in terms of working with Stefan Halper, and why did you invite Carter Page to a conference that you were planning?
I had a long background working on crime and terrorism at the White House and Congress, and went to Cambridge to finish a PhD I'd started years earlier at Harvard. And my intent was always to have a conference that looked at presidential campaigns and national security risk. I had no idea that it would blow up into this. Halper was not that engaged up until the point where he crossed paths with Page and Christopher Steele's former MI6 boss, Sir Richard Dearlove. At that point, he seemed to really focus on Page and really try to isolate him and kind of ingratiate himself with the Trump campaign in ways that seemed like a real turning point. But how Page wound up there with Halper was really a comedy of errors, and it was something where we were looking for someone from the Trump campaign to make sure the Trump campaign was represented, and it just kind of happened to fall on his lap that Page landed there.
Here you have, you right. wrote about these guys and you call them the Cambridge Four, that they're right. washed up spies. Why are washed up spies wanting to get in with the Trump campaign?
For the conference, they were not involved in that decision at all. The conference was because I came from a Republican background and I wanted an unbiased conference. I wanted to make sure if we had Madeleine Albright on one side, we had a Trump representative on the other side. I don't believe Stephen Halper even knew Carter Page was going to be at the conference until I emailed him. You know, we had talked about people. But what happened was before the conference, if you look at it, a few weeks ago, Christopher Steele had been hired by a Clinton campaign contractor. And then the spark that I think really set this off was when Stephen Halper, Christopher Steele's old boss, Richard Dearlove, and Page were all together. And Trump was portrayed, to my surprise, as this national security threat. And that's when the interest really started to bubble in terms of where this took off.
Now, that's only the beginning, Frank. He talks about how this is it. He talks about how he needed to come forward right now because of General Flynn's hearing tomorrow. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you could have come forward with this BS 3 years ago and saved everybody the trouble. Now, Devin Nunes asked Robert Mueller why he didn't interview Stephen Schrage. And in his article, Stephen Schrage says that Devin Nunes tried to paint him as a part of all of this. Now, if Devin Nunes is asking questions about somebody and their involvement, you can bet your ass there's a reason.
Oh, yeah. I perk up whenever Devin Nunes does something.
Yeah. So this was back in the day. And now in his his article, he plays the clip. They play it on the Fox News show, too. Nothing's working. Nothing. It's an 8-minute and 50-second long interview. I'm going to try and scroll through here and find the part that I'm looking for. But maybe not. They play the clip and Stefan Halper is basically, it's in the middle of a conversation. He says, oh, if you're trying to get on the NSC, you know, you might not want to deal with Flynn because he's not going to be there for very long. He's very powerful enemies and blah. And the person in the background's like, yeah.
Just not
like,
going to be there very long.
Yeah. So.
God, the hubris.
Well, Stefan Halper knows. Stefan Halper knows. And he's in the piece, Schrage hints that Stefan Halper might have been the leak to Ignatius about the calls with Kislyak, and not Baker from the Office of Net Assessment, as we've thought this entire time. This guy says that he's coming forward now because he doesn't think that this should be used as a political tool, and he doesn't want to wait for the wheels of justice any longer, and blah, blah, blah. What I think he's doing in speaking out now is covering his own butt and alerting other people to where Durham is on this whole thing. I don't trust this guy at all. He says there's more stuff to come, but he talks about, anyway, there being Republicans involved in this whole thing. He was involved in it. There's no way you can sit back now, and he's all worried about General Flynn now. He just happened to find these recordings 3 days ago. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's so frustrating.
It is. It is.
Yeah, no, just this popping up now in the introduction to people like this character now.
It's almost like when what's his name came forward from Wayfair. Patrick, what's his name? The guy who was involved with Maria Bettina. Oh, goodness. You know, he ran Wayfair, Overstock. The CEO.
Oh.
Patrick Byrne.
Oh, yeah. Patrick.
Byrne.
Yeah, where is it? Where's he been? He made some huge statements.
He's posting on his blog. I read it all the time. He talked about Roger Stone on May 28th.
Yeah, but didn't he say that he gave testimony or something like that? Wasn't he personally involved in some sort of an investigation? And he made, I forget all the predictions. What was that, 2017, 18, early 18?
Yeah.
Because when he came out, everybody said, what the hell is he? Wow, this seems pretty crazy. We were commenting on his behavior. It kind of seemed like he was really hyperactive. Maybe he was on drugs, people thought. But still, that seems like a distant memory.
Yeah, no, I mean, he posts all the time on his blog. It's called Deep Capture. And
wow.
Yeah, he posts all the time on there. And deepcapture.com. And there's a lot in there, you know. He still hasn't come forth with everything yet. But listen to this, though. This is really interesting. This is Carter Page on Maria's show previously.
One of the people who I'm told reached out to you, and we think maybe he was an informant, was this guy, Mr. Schrage. You know Mr. Schrage?
I believe he was a student at
one of the people who reached out to you.
Yeah, I think he may have been in touch in terms of setting.
And these people, you didn't know them. You were getting, this was sort of like cold calling.
You know, we're both Council on Foreign Relations members. I think, you know, I may have run into him council stuff previously. That's at least what he.
What's your take about what's going on in the House?
So now this is the issue that I have. Carter Page always drops the most important stuff he's going to say at the end of a sentence. And every single host who interviews him interrupts him at the end of his sentences and doesn't let him finish. Even Maria, who's beautiful and amazing.
Where would you have taken that comment he made?
I would have let him finish and say, he started to say at least that's what he said. And I wanted to hear the rest of that, because then I would be like, okay, why does he make no big deal out of Schrage at all? He like basically writes it off when he's asked about it. Maybe he didn't know that it was. I mean, I don't know.
Ever wonder how much of this we're watching is like a one big scripted soap opera?
Yeah. Here. Let's hear this part.
But let me go back to Stefan Halper for a minute. Sure. This is your PhD supervisor. Right. The Office of Net Assessments awarded him 4 contracts between May of 2012 and September of 2016. Right. In September of 15, he was awarded a contract valued at $245,000 to study Russia and China. Characterize that. Are these the kind of money, these the kind of paychecks you get for doing a report on China and Russia? And isn't it interesting that just months later, after he was awarded another contract of $411,000, then the wiretapping of Carter Page started?
I have never heard of that in an academic setting, you know, providing that much compensation for these types of reports. One thing I will say that was quite unusual was even after Carter Page had been kind of smeared improperly as a quote unquote Russian spy, Stephen Hopper would profusely thank me for introducing him to him. And I never really understood that. But once I saw these massive payments kind of corresponding to when he was, you know, surveilling Page in Papadopoulos, which I learned about in 2018, you know, there was obviously could be a connection there. You know, there's a theory about how that played out.
Why did you keep your mouth shut for two full years, you lying? And not only that, there's more to this clip that we're going to play, but Svetlana, they dropped her entire book. They dropped her. They voided her contract to publish her book, Spy Gate Exposed, because it was about Stefan Halper, and Stefan Halper, I'm sure, was threatening them and everything. But this guy can say all this stuff with impunity and not worry about a lawsuit at all. Write about him, all kinds of stuff. Nobody has been able to write about Stefan Halper without having some kind of a problem. I can tell you that right now.
I know.
And this guy can come and do interviews like this and talk about Stefan Halper. Give me a break. Here, wait.
The most I know about him is because of all the conversations we've had with Svetlana.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. I mean, obviously, there's been other little things. He's been implicated in articles for a couple of years now, but never anything that actually adds any kind of color or context to what his role in international affairs really are right now, really are at this point.
The key part, and I think the real smoking gun in all this, is, you know, all these tentacles lead back to this small group, including Stefan Halper at the center of Spygate, Christopher Steele at the center of Russiagate, Stefan Halper's FBI handler. None of the Senate.
Do you notice how he separates the two?
Yeah. Yes.
Nobody's ever done that before.
But let me ask you something, because I think it's you can continue with the finish the clip first.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about why I think that he separated that stuff here.
Okay.
Has subpoenaed these or called these people to talk in 4 years. I think that's the real smoking gun. How are these people being protected? And how are we at a point so close to the election and with Flynn's hearing coming up that no one has called these people and gotten to the bottom of this? And, you know, the information.
With Flynn's hearing coming up, you rat, you rat. His hearing tomorrow is like the last hearing in a 3-year escapade where he's in front of an appellate court because the DOJ is trying to drop the case and the judge won't let him. What? It's not like this is like he's being sentenced to jail and now, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are you even
doing? Yeah, I know. Oh, I know what you're saying. And many people who watch this, listen to this show and others like it know what you're saying. But this is all part of the magic trick. This is all part of the illusion for people where it's as long as it stays in the public eye for those who have not taken any time to look into how really a complex of an issue this is. It's just the Flynn trial continues and he's going to be brought before. It doesn't matter.
No,
he's
on
trial still.
I know, but that's my point. This guy is here. Wait.
Information I provide. Provides a lot of troubling aspects of this.
You actually recorded Stefan Halper. He was aware that you recorded him because you used to do recordings. But this is on January 10th, 2017, 2 days before there was a leak in the Washington Post that General Flynn was going to be investigated about the Logan Act. And you recorded Stefan Halper talking about Flynn. Let's.
Here it is.
NSA. If you feel it's appropriate for you to work for Flynn, or if you want to work with, I don't think Flynn's going to be around long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my guess, but
right.
These things work.
Huh?
What a lucky guess. We should get some lottery numbers from Halper here.
Yeah, let me just read it because it's easier to hear. If you go, he says, if you go to the NSC, and he's talking to Schlage. So why is Schlage talking about going to the NSC to work for Flynn? You know, these little things are things that don't remind me to talk about the difference between Spygate and Russiagate. Okay.
Okay.
If you go to the NSC, you have to consider very carefully if you feel it's appropriate for you to work for Flynn. why would he be even asking that question? I don't think Flynn's going to be around long. That's just my guess. The way these things work, you inevitably find yourself at odds with someone. I mean, you always do. Probably lots of people. And when your opponents or so-called enemies, when people oppose you, are looking for ways of exerting pressure, they go to people that they know you're at odds with. And that's how it builds. And eventually you get squeezed pretty hard. And then it goes on. And he says... And Schrage says, and that was my, and it trails off. And Halper says, but Flynn's reaction to that is to blow up and get angry. He's really F-U-C-K-E-D. I mean, I don't know where he goes from there, but that's his reaction. And that's why he's so unsuitable. And here is Schrage talking about that.
By the Office of Net Assessment to dirty up Flynn and dirty up Trump campaign officials. How did he know Flynn was about to blow up 2 days before it was in the Washington Post?
It was very odd because I had told him extensively that, you know, Flynn was incredibly close with President Trump. At the time, as it's been reported, the FBI was about ready to pull its investigation on January 4th before the Oval Office meeting was met where it was the Logan Act and Flynn was discussed. So I don't think he had any independent reason to expect that this would happen to Flynn. He had also bragged to me and talked to others that David Ignatius was one of his big press media contacts. It seems something that really needs to be investigated. One of his students was also working with Ignatius at the Post, Bob Robert Costa. So the fact that this has not been investigated, that no.
Maybe if you would have come forward before today. Like, this is all such a big farce. This guy is such a swat. Like, he's either covering his butt, he's flipped, a combination of both, or he's trying to blow up the Durham investigation and let everybody know they're on to Halper.
Yeah, and I think for the public that's consuming these interviews and these articles and everything, I think that they just want everybody to throw their hands up in defeat and because they can't figure it out. What is everybody speaking on behalf of? Why is everything so fork-tongued? It's so weird. And the worst thing about this is you can't even really assure yourself that at some point we're gonna get the answer.
Well, you know, I guess not just, technically, no, we can't, but, you know.
It just seems like everybody's always hedging their bets. And if we're looking at this entire scenario as if we would a roulette table or something like that, it just seems like so many people are putting their chips on so many different parts of the board just to make sure that it's never a total loss.
Well, now wonder out loud why it is that we haven't seen an indictment yet and why John Durham is taking so long to do his investigation and stop every, not you, but everybody just take a breath because this is the kind of crap that he's got to figure out.
Yeah.
I mean,
hey, I didn't pay attention to this either, but I heard about a flurry or maybe one or two or one, I don't know, executive orders over the weekend.
There were four.
There were four. And are they, what were they? I don't hope I'm not derailing this.
No, I just want to explain the difference between Spygate and Russiagate real quick. And then I will
jump right. Ahead.
We have an article up at Uncover DC about these executive orders this morning. So it's perfect timing. So Russiagate is the Christopher Steele dossier, et cetera, so on and so forth, that Russia colluded with Donald Trump to help get him elected. Spygate is the fact that there were literally intelligence operatives from all over the world working to feed information into both the FBI and the CIA, some of which made it into the dossier and others of which were just seeded into the ICA. He knows the difference between those two things and he says it without realizing it. That is a huge tell for me that he said that. Huge tell. Schrage. I want to get him. I wonder if he'll do an interview.
Schrage.
Probably not.
Schwoogie. Wasn't that from Something About Mary?
Oh, I don't Schwoogie. Remember.
Wasn't that the crazy ex-boyfriend who had the hives all over his head?
I don't remember his name.
You ever have a white head on your eyeball?
Oh, gosh. Don't even say that. That's just nasty. Okay, four executive orders. The payroll tax holiday. This is a problem for me, in a way, because it looks like it's deferred, Frank.
What do you mean?
The first order created a payroll tax holiday until the end of 2020 for Americans making less than $100,000 a year. It reads, quote, the Secretary of the Treasury is directed to use his authority to defer the withholding, deposit, and payment of the tax imposed by 26 U.S.C. 3101A and so much of the tax imposed by 26 U.S.C. 3201 as is attributable to the rate in effect under blah, 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 blah. The deferral shall be made available with respect to any employee, the amount of whose wages or compensation as applicable payable during any biweekly pay period generally is less than $4,000. Amounts deferred shall be deferred without any penalty, interest, additional amount, or addition to the tax. That means you have to pay it back, but how and when?
Huh.
It's deferred. It's not forgiven.
Okay.
Memorandum on deferring payroll tax obligations. Tax forgiveness. The Secretary of the Treasury shall explore avenues, including legislation, to eliminate the obligation to pay the taxes deferred pursuant to the implementation of this memo. So they want to get rid of them, but they're going to need some kind of act of God to be able to. The next one, student debt relief, suspending loan payments and temporarily setting interest rates to zero.
For how long?
It doesn't have an expiration date.
Oh, God. You know, Tracy, over the weekend, I'm going to talk about this tonight on my show. Over the weekend, I went to my grandmother's house to go visit her, sit with her for a little while, as I always do on the weekend. It's always the baseline that I do because the weeks get so nuts. So I'm sitting there, and of course, her aide has CNN on, but she's not really, it's just something to put on. She really doesn't, it's not like I walk on in there and it's like Uber Democrat time. She just puts on the news. She's from Africa. And you know, she doesn't really know too much about how things are over here as far as politically.
Yeah.
Just generally thinks that CNN is just a news network. You put on the news, that's all. And I'm sitting there for 5 minutes. 5 minutes watching this nightmare. Saturday afternoon, 12:30. Whoever the hell is hosting, some brunette, and she has a woman calling in with some Australian guy as her call partner sitting next to her, and they're obviously talking about coronavirus because it is the only issue. It is the only thing. It is purely an American issue now. The rest of the world seems to be getting on however the hell they're getting on. China doesn't even pay that much attention to it anymore. But this is our issue now. That's it. That's all it is over here, coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman, she was talking about how this virus, now that we're coming up on school, which is magically infecting children now, we're coming up on school, and she wanted to really drive home the idea and the fact that she says that this virus is in a disproportionate way affecting women because women are putting their careers on hold now to take care of the children in the school. Women. And which is, of course, convenient because women – we're opening up businesses more, at a higher rate than any other time in American history. Unemployment was just as low as every other minority demographic group under Trump's modest tax cuts and deregulation practices. I mean, all the things that they could not get him on. So she's talking about how women are being disproportionately affected by coronavirus because of all this, and careers are being put on hold. The guy, the Australian guy sitting next to her, is playing this manipulative, crazy ex-girlfriend shtick where he's saying, you know, I really don't understand why Trump and Republicans aren't taking up the Democrats' the relief plan, because you would think that Trump would understand that if the economy gets a boost, it helps his reelection bid. So I'm watching this twisted logic of people trying to say that the Democrats are offering a way out, even though it was Democrat state governments that destroyed all of this stuff, destroyed everybody in 2020 with their reaction to this virus because Trump, in all of these very real ways, these demographic nightmare ways, was winning for women, for minorities, for the entire economy.
Yeah.
And to see this being used here, now we're mired in relief packages and deferment plans and all this stuff, and they're trying so hard to put their hands on the steering wheel of this, because prior to this very, very convenient virus, it's like a miracle for this group of lunatics. Prior to this virus, what the hell did they have? There was nothing. And now here we are talking about deferment plans and how we're just trying to survive the election season and everybody trying to play the game of who has the higher card and who could claim rights to whatever issues. I can't stand it. I can't stand it anymore.
Well, I will say this. The Democrats are suing, as we know, President Trump over these things. There was an eviction for the moratorium on evictions for homeowners and extending the federal unemployment payments and stuff like that. Now the Democrats are coming out to sue because it's unconstitutional. How dare he do this? Blah, 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 blah. I don't think President Trump expects that these executive orders will be carried out. I think that he signed them to try and do something because Congress wouldn't act. I don't believe that we should spend any more money. That's not the point here. But to the American people, Congress wouldn't act. The Democrats were holding everything up. They wanted trillions of dollars for freaking the Green New Deal and all kinds of other stuff, right? President Trump says, that's it. I'm done waiting with you people. Signs student loan forgiveness basically into law, right? Not into law, but signs an executive order for student loan forgiveness. Who does that attract?
The youth.
Okay. Homeowners, you know, moratorium on evictions, payroll taxes, basically everybody in the country making under $100,000. That's something else. And all these people now see the Democrats suing President Trump to stop him from doing all the things that they've been asking them to do forever.
I think it's brilliant in that sense. I mean, most executive orders are illegal. But as far as and most actions of Congress are illegal. So as far as what everybody's doing right now, it always whittles down to there is crises playing out before our eyes, and everyone is trying to politicize and claim rights to the moral high ground on whatever those individual crises are. So I understand the political strategy behind putting on out those executive orders, just so everybody can constantly see the contrast of what people say and what people do. And
I understand. There's more than that, though. There's more than that. Remember what they did about Obama's executive order on DACA? They said, so this flies right in the face of that, too. Well, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander, people. It just shows all of their hypocrisy all in one foul swoop now. So I get what you're saying, and I totally agree with you on all of it. I don't like any of these policies. I think they're all horrible. I don't think there should be extended federal unemployment. I don't think that we should be, you know, eliminating the interest on student loan debt. I don't think that we should be deferring. Well, we should be deferring. We should be not deferring payroll tax. We should get rid of the payroll tax altogether, which is something that President Trump says he wants to do. But I think there's greater political things at play here.
I understand that this is all about November. And ultimately, as I always say, whether or not this relief plan or the general spending that goes on in normal times in this government, no matter what, the trajectory that we're on financially is going to require a major economic reset one day, a new currency, a new way forward. So I'm not looking at this like saying, oh, we're spending too much. How are we ever going to pay down the debt? The debt, you're never going to pay the debt. That's a foregone conclusion. So I'm not even looking at it that way. I am looking at it completely, like you're saying, as what is the political strategy behind this? What is the punch, the counterpunch? You know, I understand that. And it's hopefully people are keeping their eyes open. They're seeing what is being rejected and what is being challenged. Because it is very hypocritical, and it's out in the open. I mean, it started with that whole DACA thing in 2018 or whenever the hell it was. It started there. I said, I hope people are paying attention to this. They don't care about you dreamers out there. They want to keep you in limbo because you are political poker chips. And that's it. And now this virus has been such a miracle for Democrats.
I know. And just today, by the way, it came out that 97,000 students have been infected with the coronavirus. Here, real quick before we run, I have it right here.
The U.S. surpassing 5 million coronavirus cases as Texas records its highest seven-day positivity rate since the pandemic began for that state. And as the nation wrestles with reopening schools in the fall, a new report finds more than 97,000 children tested positive for COVID-19 in the last 2 weeks of July.
If you believe that number, I have a bridge to sell you.
Yeah.
That is just an absolutely absurd, absurd. All we haven't heard about any kids having anything or getting tested or anything. Now, all of a sudden, there's 100,000 of them in the past 2 weeks. Give me a break. Give me a break.
So listen, it smells like crap to me too, Tracy. But to play devil's advocate, someone says, well, what's your, you know, what, how, you know, how are you drawing that conclusion, Tracy, that it's all BS that these children are not testing positive now? What would you attribute these positive tests to?
Are they just
magnifying?
Yeah. Or I mean, tests that are just sensitive to children on purpose because they know that they can mess again. All they have to do is change the parameters and they can get whatever result they want out of these PCR tests. All they need to do is change the parameters. Somebody who's never been exposed to COVID before in their lives will test positive for COVID if they want them to. I keep trying to tell everybody this. Not you. I mean, in general, anyone I come in contact with that I talk to, source wise or anything, please take a look at the PCR tests. I'm screaming it from the hills. It's like a hill that I would die on. They can mess with the test. They can get whatever. If they wanted the virus to be gone tomorrow, all they have to do is change the parameters of the PCR test. It would be gone.
Huh. I mean, that's what I assume.
Yeah.
That's what I assume. We've seen so much manipulation with these tests and state to state how it's changing, and all the on-air admissions from state and federal health officials, the admissions alone, the presumed deaths, the thousands at a time, and there's no reason to trust the numbers. No reason at this point to trust the numbers. And just as everybody's starting to peak anxiety over what's going to happen when schools reopen, all of a sudden, 100,000 children.
Right after Chuck Schumer comes out and says they need to reopen schools. You know, they did all that polling internally that showed that parents are losing their minds over the Democrats saying schools should remain closed. So Chuck Schumer comes out and says that everybody should go back to school because of the economy. And then, oh, no, we can't have that. I'm just really quickly, because I'm going to be late to my appointment because we started late, but I just want to say this. Schools here in South Carolina start September 8th, a couple weeks away, right? The way that they're running school here, Frank, is like asinine, okay? I let my kids decide whether or not they wanted to go in or do full-time virtual learning. They both decided they want to go in. Great. They are going to know whether or not they're in school in three different ways. There's either full-time instruction, always in school, a hybrid model where 3 days of the week they're in school and 2 days they're home, or it's full-time virtual learning, depending on the rate of spread of the disease in the community. So every week could be a different method of learning for them. They could be home 1 week. They could be half in, half out 1 week and back in school the whole time the week after, only to be home the week after that.
Same here.
Okay, so tell me how that consistency or lack thereof is good for anybody. How are parents going to go back to work not knowing whether or not their kids are not going to have care the week after, depending on the whims of the testing of this virus?
I'm telling this is why I said, well, first of all, up here in the Connecticut area, my niece and nephew, I've been talking to my sister-in-law, and she's been sending me all of the emails that have been coming home from my niece and nephew's school. And these criteria for going back are so insane and so scary. It's very, very, it's a concentration camp. I call them, you know, concentration classrooms. And they're so insane. And once again, always with the disclaimer that this could change week to week. And as far as 3 days every week, they're actually up here in Connecticut 2 days. So I know my nephew is going to school, at least the plan for now is to go to school on Mondays and Fridays. My niece is going to be going to school on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and everybody gets Wednesday off so they can do major top to bottom desanitizing of the building on Wednesdays and the weekends. So you get 2 days a week, and they're alternating. So one kid's home and one kid's in school, and it's just there's no end in sight, and you can't have any consistency. And this is why I said, I know this is hard. This is a lot easier said than done, because everybody's lives are being put on hold, and it's not our fault. It's because of governments.
Yeah.
Governments. If you're a teacher out there, please, we've talked about direct care in healthcare and how anybody out there who wants to be a doctor has got to start looking at the world in a different way. If you are a teacher, please start thinking like a personal trainer. Start thinking how to market yourself like you're a personal trainer. Get people to know that you are willing to put together education pods, 3 to 4 hours a day, where you will take up to 5 children and you will do a curriculum that is pretty much a la carte what parents want you to teach their little pods of kids. You will create a great little business for yourself.
Yeah, but the
parents will be more in control of education than ever before, and this you can carry on with your lives. While the rest of the country waits for their shepherds to tell them when they can take a shit, when they can do whatever.
There's a problem with that, though, quickly. Money. When you're in Suffolk County and Long Island and you're in New York and you're paying, $18,000 a year in school tax, and then you've got to come out with more money out of pocket to pay for education, you're not getting that money back from the school.
If they're not in school, you can say it's a problem, and it is, because that is what's on the books right now. But there's something else that everybody has to start taking advantage of, and that's class action lawsuits.
Yeah, yeah.
If nobody's going to school and you're taking $20,000 out of my pay every year to put children into school, which I think is already absurd, because there's no reason why I should pay taxes when I have no children in the school system to begin with. But class action lawsuits. There's no reason why anybody should be taxed if nobody's in school.
I agree. That's it for today. I can't do any more. I'm going to be in trouble. Good show. Finally.
Yeah.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. You can find us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you back here on Wednesday.
Later.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
Why is it that women can say, hey, I'm going shopping with my girlfriends, or yeah, it's a girls' night out, gonna hang with my girlfriends? But guys can't say, yeah, I'm going out to play golf with my boyfriends. Or what? Have you ever thought of
it? Wait, you don't say that?
Froggy, stop. What is the disparity here?
You can say that. I mean, I know people who probably do say that.
Yeah, I mean, there's one segment of fellas who probably say it pretty freely. Yeah,
well, I'm saying heterosexually. So heterosexually, guys don't say I'm hanging with my boyfriends. But girls say it all the time, gonna hang with my girlfriends.
Is there something you'd like to tell me?
No, I thought about that earlier today, and I just thought I'd ask the question. I think it's a fair question.
Uh-huh.
I'm recording the podcast tonight with my boyfriends, so.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be available for a while.
This seems to be what they call stoner talk. Are you on some sort of new medication?
What do you mean it's stoner talk? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, because the other night I took my medication, which I'm prescribed by a doctor in gym shorts, and I was
thinking to myself, hang on. What do you mean you have a doctor in gym shorts? What the hell does that mean?
Well, my medical doctor for what we're talking about, which is medical cannabis, was wearing gym shorts and a tank top when I went to go see him.
All right, That's it. Wait a minute. Why the hell are you prescribed allegedly medical cannabis anyway?
I know.
Because I have migraines and I have ulcers and I have flat feet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because you have IBS.
And IBS. Oh. Thank you. That was the one I forgot.
Michelle's got a prompt Froggy on why he's taking medical cannabis.
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.